What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
Well, our ancestors and so forth is there. I'm petitioning the elders for permission to speak. The elder in the house. May I have permission to speak?
I should.
Alright. So we're here for Juneteenth. A Juneteenth celebration. And I think we're all pretty clear about what Juneteenth is, right? Do we need to elaborate on Juneteenth, or do we have a pretty good idea about what Juneteenth is? Okay. So I like to take the angle of our history that prolific scholars like Dr. Amos Wilson, I like to take the angle that he took, or similar to that. One of the things I look at history for is partially to celebrate it, partially to remember it, but more importantly, to learn from it. And to learn about what it means to us today and how can we utilize the growth and the setbacks to move forward in a more proficient way to create a solid foundation for the future of our children. Because if you're talking about nation building, the whole concept and notion of nation building is about creating and generating legacy to that nation. One of the biggest things I think that we lose sight of is when we compare ourselves to other groups of people in this country, I don't really think we give a true analysis of what our circumstance was in comparison to people who migrated here from other lands, people who were invited here for their skill set and also for the expansion of this thing called America. When the pilgrims came here, they voluntarily got on those boats. They voluntarily came here to set up camp. They voluntarily came here to establish communities. They saw a future for their people here. When the Spanish came in, they too voluntarily got on those ships. They too saw an opportunity to generate a legacy for their people here. The same thing, the Polish, the Irish, the Italians, and the Jews. Well, you know, the people who you identify with in Israel, right? So, when our people came here, our people didn't come here as a collective family unit. Our people didn't come here from this particular part of Africa, that particular part of Africa, as one whole people. The men were brought to this country, servitude and labor, free servitude and labor. Once the British decided to end maritime slave policy in about 1810-1811, then we saw an influx of African women brought to this country. Again, from all different parts of Africa. They ended up on the west coast, but they came from all different parts. The women were brought here for two purposes. One, they were brought here as breeders. Breeders for more of our people. And they were also brought here to be sexually exploited by the Europeans who brought them here. They didn't necessarily, so what I'm trying to say is, our origins to the beginnings of our time in this country, and even those of us who are already here, who were then were brought into the slave program. We didn't come here consolidated as a group. We didn't come here looking for legacy. We didn't come here looking to build a future prodigy for our nation. We came here as many separate nations that, through methods of survival, learned how to cross-communicate, learn how to deal with each other, learn that I need you, you need me, if we're going to survive this whole experience. In order to be here, we have to become a new people. So when you look back at the traditions, and you look back at the heritage of all these different groups, you can go back to St. Patrick's Day, because, you know, the Irish can go back to their lineage and history all the way back in Ireland. You know, we might not like it, but the Italians still celebrate Columbus Day. And they too can go back to their times in Sicily and all those different places in centuries ago in Italy. Many can go back to the Dark Ages with their lineage. For far too many of us, we can't go too much further back than 1860. And I say that to say, in understanding that I have grace for our stagnation in this country, I have grace for the fact that somehow, some way, every time it feels like we're about to get it together, something minute, something very small, comes through. And like a bowling ball to helpless tent, we become scattered in a chaotic fashion and separated again. This is why, as much as I embrace our African culture, and I think much of it must be much lamented, I think we also need to understand the need to create or maintain a culture of our own here in this land that can withstand all of the diametric opposition that is bound to face. See, this is one of the reasons why we have so many people that will say that, well, black people are not a monolith. You can't expect us all to be on the same page. I say, it's funny. Asians are not a monolith. Europeans are far from a monolith. Europeans have been fighting each other since the scripture and the history of their own origins. They have not stopped fighting. But when it comes to understanding racial politics, every other one of those groups seem to understand that they must be solid across the line. In other words, they'll get to their internal grievances later. But first, they got to deal with us. Because whether you know it or not, even though we are new people to these lands, the war against African-born people, this is an ancient war. they have not forgot to still keep their foot on our earth, keep their feet on our backs, because they understand. See, we think it's kumbaya sometimes. Oh, you know, our friend Charlie, he's cool, so all white folk are cool. Probably. But systemically speaking, your children are still competing against their children for the future of access to resources, power, and being able to put forth a new part of their legacy. So while you're teaching your children kumbaya, when they have Sunday dinner, they're talking about, you know they're not like us, right? It's cool that you're friends with Jamal, but just understand, at some point in time, you're going to have to choose your heritage. You're going to have to choose which side of the line you stand in regards to nationalism. So understanding that, one of the key things in terms of rebuilding and reestablishing or moving forward into creating a form of nationalism for us is we have to start by bringing back the family unit. Because you can't build a nation based off broken people. And broken people typically come from broken families. We have a culture where it's acceptable to co-parent, where it's acceptable to be baby daddies and baby moms, where it's acceptable to have this hodgepodge of children that are sired by one man, 15 to 16 women, and 35 children. And then we say he's a deadbeat dad because he can't be a father to any one of those children. But we don't attack it at the root. We don't come for it at the beginning. We got babies in here. Why aren't we really telling them the truth about the lies that's ahead of them? Why are we not telling all those girls, hey, listen, what's between your legs is so valuable that you need to think twice, three times, four times before you let somebody cross that threshold? It's not all fun and games. Because we heard the brothers talking about the different senses. There's another one too we call soul ties. And every time somebody enters you, they leave a bit of their soul, they're connected with you genetically for the rest of your life. Any curse on their soul, any curse on their spirit is in you. And guess what? It crosses the blood brain barrier. So now it even affects the way you think. Why are we really honest with our babies? Why are we telling these young brothers out here, hey, listen, we need to break generational curses by getting you straight on a straight and narrow path. Take all this energy you have and put it in the skill sets that will build the next generation. Break the curses. We're too laid back. We're too cool. Everybody want to be the cool friend, the cool parent, the cool this and that and the other. And you're doing your children, our future, our legacy a great disservice. The only time we come together is when a crisis scenario ensues. They're going to gun down Trayvon Martin. Now the community comes together. What? They're going to gun down Mike Brown. Now the community comes together. What? They're going to shoot Ariana Jones in the house, breaking in the wrong house, looking for a different person, and shoot up her house and kill a 6-year-old black girl. And then we come together. And then we fall apart because we don't even have an ironclad form or formation for what it looks like when we're supposed to be standing and stepping on business. So we let government paid agents and provocateurs like Black Lives Matter, every single time they walk to the front of the room like they're the ones that's supposed to be in charge telling us what to do. And we turn around, listen, and follow, because guess what? The one thing they have is we don't is a plan. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I realized, and I guess it's been a lifelong journey to get there. Next week I'll be 52 years old. But I guess it's a lifelong journey to get there. My purpose in life is to save black boys. Not that our girls don't need saving, they do. But I can only do one thing at a time. And it's up to you ladies, you sisters, you elders, to sit these young sisters down and they sit in between, they swap between your head and you're doing their hair to remember their virtue and their value and their purpose in life. And it's not to be out here having fun and twerking and all that other crazy stuff that we see going on. That's lessening their value. We watch videos up here of missing black girls. It broke my heart to see that little girl missing in D.C. You know why? Because it was a big story, a big publication put out by black people about those missing black girls in D.C. And guess what? All the black feminists that aligned themselves with white feminists, guess what the National Organization of Women were covering at that time? They were saying transgenders have a right just like you to go in every bathroom they want to. Care not about blackness and missing black girls. And they still don't. You're probably in league with the people that are trafficking black, missing black girls. Like all those rabbis they keep rounding up in Jersey, sending those children to Israel. I don't speak nothing but the truth and nothing that I can't prove. That was a front page story that nobody followed. And that happened 10 years ago. So, by the way, we were part of two successful, searches to bring our children back. We were part of two, before two of our girls got home. We were going on the streets, flyers, we were walking through the woods, we were running through neighborhoods on the most dangerous corners in the city. We got our babies back. Will was there.
Yes, sir.
We're real steppers out here. So the program I put together and I've been working on for the last few years is a program called the Jack and Chain. Anybody familiar with the term Jack and Chain? I see somebody. Anybody familiar with the term Jack and Chain? Okay. So the term Jack and Chain is an Ethiopian term for a man who is the protector of the culture. Jackness are seen as people who are responsible, who are leaders, people who operate integrity. Their dignity is known across the village, known across the community. And actually, we use that term instead of using the term mentor, because mentor, the Greek term mentor, has a lot of things we don't necessarily want to be associated with in regards to our relationship from the men and boys. So we come up with the concept of Jack and Chain. I say we, I spend time talking to a lot of people. I never take full credit for anything I've done. We did the Independence Day Project film, for which we actually talked about the setting in that film. All right? It's a program where there's an elder to me. I have an elder. That elder is going to pour into me the facts of life. That elder is going to pour into me my rights and my wrongs. That elder is basically going to check me to make sure I stay on the right path. It's my job now to go a generation or two after me. And now I take those same lessons, those same principles, and I pass it on to that young brother. That young brother, maybe in his 30s, maybe in his 40s, he's going to pass that on to somebody that's of age, say 25 or so, college age, whatever. That person's going to extend, and now that person's talking to kids in high school. Linked up, tied together. And then we're going to go back to middle school. We're going to go back to elementary school. We're going to go back as far as we can go to where young brothers, to older brothers, can link up a commonality, can link up in terms of a building character, and in terms of reforming the public image of young black men, of black men period. And we call it the Jetson chain because each person on the chain pulls somebody else forward. So in the process, when we got the workshop together, working on the book and documentary right now, the precepts anyway. So I said all that to say, if we want to change our future, then we better plan for it. And we better understand the realities of where we are. Juneteenth is a wonderful celebration, but by no way, no means is it our Independence Day. We didn't write a treaty. We didn't write a declaration. We didn't talk about the bylaws in which our nation would be built. That wasn't done at Juneteenth. In fact, we didn't author or write a mere sentence or period for that whole Emancipation Proclamation. And a lot of the people that supposedly were there to help us, as soon as the Civil War ended and the institution of slavery was nationalized, because that's what the 13th Amendment did. It didn't end slavery. It just said we locked you up anywhere in the country. Now we can reinstitute slavery. If we operate in that fashion, understand something, then we have to also understand that the time we choose to make our declarations now, what do we want our nation to look like? What are our freedoms going to fight for? What are the ministries we're going to utilize to make sure our people can be fed, our people can be housed, and our land can be grazed, and our food can be grown? What are we going to do with all those things? Because we don't have much time for that. That war in Iran, throw a monkey wrench in the budget, a lot of us right now, a month from now, will be suffering the consequences of massive stagflation. So I'd like to thank Brother Craig for giving me a few minutes to come up here. So I'd like to thank all of you for being attentive and just being here. You're beautiful. Your hearts and souls are beautiful. And we deserve to experience heaven on earth. So let's do the dirty work in the Ashe. Ashe.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Office Hours with your good brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones. And what can I say, family? We're here, locked in. All right. And I know, and I appreciate all of you for catching up with us on another Philly Friday edition of the Fet Life Station here at FetLifeStation.com. And I truly appreciate you all for coming out. And y'all need more. Y'all need to come check out our, our podcast network, the True Stories Podcast Network. You need to check it out because we have all these episodes, and they're locked in. They're saved. We upload weekly, sometimes more than once a week. We get it in, you know. Y'all gonna have to forgive me this time because, man, my computer, the battery on my computer died, and, it is what it is, y'all. So I'm working with a lot of backup stuff over here. And so, one of the things that, I want to jump into before we get into too much is I want to go back to, what was said previously, you know, in this particular episode. And yes, 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 family, that was me. All right. That was your brother speaking at a Juneteenth event at the Rotunda here in Philadelphia. Shout out to my brother, Bigger Dre, for putting that together. And shout out to, you know, the elder who came all the way down from Capitol Heights in Washington, near Washington, D.C., Dr. Baruch, you know, gave us a fantastic workshop on, give us a fantastic workshop on, you know, just the mechanisms of our health and ways to regain and reclaim mastery over our health. You know, I was able to, you know, chat it up with him. And it's funny because the last time I saw him, he has a restaurant in D.C. called Everlasting Life, and which the food is a whole vegan restaurant. And I was down there. I was invited there back in 2018, the latter part of 2018, to premiere for the D.C. area my film, The Independence Day Project. So it was a pleasure seeing Dr. Baruch again. The last time I saw him, you know, we was kind of like ships passing through the night. But this time I got a chance to sit down and talk with him for a minute. I was able to take heed in some of his products that he offered. One of those tonics, my God, was strong, but it you know, it's I can definitely see it has an effect. I can feel the effects of it all. So, but the Jagna chain, the last thing I spoke about in that whole piece, because, you know, many of you have heard me talk about it before, and I think it's very important that we identify something that's specifically aligned with creating a foundation and creating, you know, a place of permanence for young black males. Because one of the things that's missing in society, it's like, you know, it was funny. I was talking to, you know, a young brother today, you know, a sister who was at that program wanted me to talk to somebody who, you know, a young man. And we kind of had a conversation, so I'm not going to dive too much into the conversation, but one of the things that I did talk about with him is black males don't receive too much tutelage in regards to respect, in regards to responsibility, in terms of, in regards to duty, in terms of who they are and what it means to be a man. Many of them are just expected to get to 16, 17, 18 years old and identify and understand fully what the responsibility of a man is. And I think that that's something that we really need to take a look at and examine, because there's no recourse. There's no dialing it back once they get to that age in life. What tends to happen is Many of our brothers, myself included, are just expected to know what a man is. And then we're told what a man is by people who have never truly seen a man operate. And the majority of the time is women in our lives, right? So very few of us have this experience, right? Hold on, let me see if I can find it real quick. Very well, and you know what? I'm not even gonna go to that. Like I said, and you gotta, you know, excuse me for a second, because I'm juggling right now. it's hard for me to understand, like, you know. Well, it's hard for me to operate on one screen. I'm typically operating on three screens. So I want y'all to check this out real quick. I got a clip that I want y'all to check out. And this is Cam Newton just talking about, like, some of the things men go through that we're not really allowed to talk about. So I want y'all to take heed and listen to what this brother is talking about. Oh, what the hell? Okay. Yeah, that's my mouse. Check it out.
He doesn't feel sorry for the man. Society can feel sorry for a woman. And that's not to negate or suppress. There's women that would say, I'm going through a lot. Mm-hmm. Cool. Baby, what you need? Mm-hmm. We're going to speak so much life into you and get you up and get you back and get you rocking and rolling with your, whatever your circumstance is. And your circumstance can be created off of what you did. Mm-hmm. as a man, if I'm wallowing in my own sorrow, and if I'm like, man, I don't feel like doing it, society gonna look at you and like, all right, cool. Nigga, you ain't a man. I got 9 kids. You think they care about if I'm feeling good or not?
But that's back to what we were saying earlier. Like, men don't show that vulnerable side. Like, y'all not gonna get on online and just everything is all good.
Because really, nobody cares.
That's not true. You don't show it.
It's not
because in your mind, it's like they don't care. That's not true. That's what you told me earlier.
I give you an example. A girl or a woman comes online and says, I'm broke. I just lost everything. Mm-hmm. She can still find someone that can change that dynamic to some capacity in any type of way. Mm-hmm. Right? If a dude says, I'm broke, I done lost everything, instantly he lost all his value. Mm-hmm. If you can't provide or do nothing for the people that you come in contact with, you're meaningless as a man. Mm-hmm. That's what society has trained us to be. Mm-hmm. We have to be providers. We have to protect. When something happened with you and your man, y'all cuddled up or whatever situation, and you hear a bum, 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 bum downstairs. If that man says, Carisha, go downstairs and see what's going on. You got to be on the front line.
Yeah.
If something happens to my son, his mama going to call me and say, hey, this is what happened. It's my job to put a security in her heart to say, when I hang up that phone, she know without a shadow of a doubt, I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Women don't have that same standard, nor are they expected to either. So when you're saying men have to be selfish, that's the reason. When men have to get up and do it and they don't show it, that's the reason. Because nobody ain't going to feel sorry for us. You got to do something. And if you don't, that's not manlike. Nobody care about you and your feelings, nigga. You got to figure these things out. And every man knows that feeling. Because when your family call on you, they don't care that you got a headache. They honestly don't care that you got a sickness. You the man of this house. And you got to do something about it. It doesn't feel sorry for the man.
And that's the bottom line, the bones truth of it all. It doesn't feel sorry for us. The world does not feel sorry for men. There's no space. And don't let it be black men, please. The world has no empathy for a black man's struggles. And we deal with this in our life. And let's be clear. When Cam Newton is saying men, he's being politically correct. He's talking about black men. All right? Because I've seen white men fall flat on their face and the community comes rally behind them. You know, it's other communities will rally behind their men. In our community, it does not happen. The men don't even rally around the men in our community. There's starting to be a slow change and shift in the waters and the tide. But make it clear, nobody comes to your aid and assistance. And everybody that you deal with needs you to be okay so that you can be okay and well enough to help them through whatever they got to get through. You still got to be the rock in their lives. And this is something that is expected. Now, that's one of the things that will be put upon a young man at a very young age. Typically happens, parents split at some time early on. Child is still a preteen. He's told he's the man of the house. The bulk and weight of the emotional load he has to carry, the emotional intelligence he has to develop, because he understands at that particular moment, first of all, he cannot be a burden, even as a child, he cannot be a burden to his mother. It's funny because I remember when I used to go to church, and I had missed this particular sermon, but my homie had told me, it was like a Mother's Day sermon. And the pastor had said, the young men, you're supposed to be a support. You're not supposed to be, what did he call it? a burden to your mothers. I'm thinking, and then as I think about that now, 20 years later, I have to ask myself a question. Aren't children supposed to be burdens to their parents? And why is that obsolete in the black community? And this is one of the so when Cam was talking, and you saw the sister say black men need to be more vulnerable. Have we not seen the fallout of brothers being vulnerable to their women? Have we not seen it, how it's been utilized and weaponized as a form of weakness within that man? How if a man has a weak moment and he confides in his woman, that oftentimes that woman takes that and she stores it away in the memory banks. And then once it's stored away, it will be utilized anytime there's an argument, there's a disagreement. If he ever has the audacity to critique anything she does, it's right in the holster. She's loading the clips with it. Hold on. She's loading the clip. And we gotta be honest about that as black men. As we continuously, you know, evolve in this day and time through the circumstances that we're facing, you know, and often too, right? Black men are catching strays, right? And you know, so this right here is more so, well, check out this in terms of like this particular clip. Check out this particular clip before we actually go into something else, because I want y'all to hear just how much it does not matter, how little logic matters when somebody has the need to be right. Check this out.
Hey, y'all, come look at this.
So if I say 1 + 1 = 2, can I not say 1 + 1 = 2 because I'm not a mathematician?
I'm not saying that's not the same.
No, it is the same. The logic applies across the board. A lot of women are unreasonable and illogical. So I'm giving you the same logic in another perspective. So if I say 1 + 1 = 2, I cannot say that because I'm not a mathematician. If I say that you can die from cancer, you're saying that I can't say that because I'm not a doctor and I don't do cancer research. If you're saying that I can't say that I can die in a car accident because I'm not a car manufacturer. So what you're saying doesn't make any logical sense if you put it in any other perspective. If I say that money can help you buy things, you're saying that I can't say that because I'm not an accountant. So that doesn't really make any logical sense. So whether someone is a part of what they're saying or not, you have to be able to critique what they say is either right or wrong, not if it's personable to them.
I was saying, you know, like, you can't say nothing if you haven't been been through that. You know what I'm saying? That's why I asked you, would you think or not? Because you were saying anything. You saying how women act or something. That's why I asked you, are you single or not?
Okay, like, if I was saying, okay, let's again. First of all, right.
And let's be clear about what just happened. That's called gaslighting and moving the goalposts. All right? It's basically what he's saying is she's trying to tell him that if he's not in a relationship, if he's never been abused, if he's never been in certain circumstances, that he cannot critique it or he can't speak on it. And he's identifying the fact that if that's the case, well, I'm going to let him respond to a lot of it, and then we're going to follow up.
Answer your question.
Let me give you an example. If you're saying, if somebody was like, okay, I beat on, you got beat on, say you beat on your woman, and you never did, and you speaking on a situation how a woman should leave or something, you can't really say that they should just leave them if you've never been through it. That's what I'm saying. You get what I'm saying? Like, you can't speak on a situation that has nothing, like, you never you know, been
through it. So by that logic, a therapist wouldn't be able to be a therapist that they may go speak to, because let's say that therapist never got beat on.
But I'm just saying in general.
I don't give a fuck.
It's not easy.
That's in general. That's another general consensus. So what you're saying, that logic would have to apply to someone who does therapy for people who've been abused. So what you're saying is they can't give the person who's abused. So who does the abused person go to? Who does the victim go to? Based on your logic, who does the victim go to? So the victim can only go to other victim people who were victims, based on your logic. So if you're a fat person, you can't take advice to someone who's not fat on how to lose weight.
That's what I'm saying. You're not making sense.
No, I am making a lot of sense. It's just going over your head because you're not intelligent.
Yes, I am. I'm definitely am.
Name three countries not connected to North America.
South Dakota.
What? Thank you very much. So you understand exactly what it means when you're talking to people who have a lack of intelligence. She thinks South Dakota is a country.
So, that was just basically her trying to have the need to be right, because she couldn't dress down his argument or any of his talking points. And the lengths that she went through to try to create a situation or a circumstance where she didn't have to, but she wasn't going to allow for him to, when she wasn't going to allow for him to just basically at least acknowledge that he was right. You know what I'm saying? And that's unfortunately what we deal with all the time. And you know how exhausting that is to deal with a circumstance where no matter what happens, you always have to be wrong. No matter what happens, you always have to be wrong as a brother. It's draining. It's not only is it draining, it sucks the life out of you. You know, it's one of those things where we, you know, and I want y'all to check this here from, I want y'all to, because this is what it comes down to, right? Shout out to Kevin Samuels. Check this out. Hold on, I have to make sure it's not muted.
No, for a fact, you have out-earned your black female counterpart. But because she has an office job, she has the nerve to look down on you and guys like you. While she's in tens of thousands of dollars of debt, far too many white-collar women are so rude, so disrespectful, so contemptuous, so contentious with how in which they handle blue-collar men. Salute to my blue-collar brethren. I said it before and I say it again. White-collar men ain't shit without you. We aren't shit without blue-collar men. The world runs on what blue-collar men do with their hands. So the only reason this kind of exists right now is because we've civilized the world in general and got first-world problems. But if the power grid went out and the zombies start coming out, give me all the. You're going to want to be around the blue-collar men, not the white-collar guys.
And the contempt that he speaks to, right? And then this is another thing too, sidebar. KS always spoke to all black men. He always spoke to all black men. Even non-black men registered with his message. But he always spoke to all black men of all classes, whether you were blue collar, white collar, whether you were rich, whether you were medium income. When he utilizes data, numbers, and statistics, he always pointed to the benefits of black men and the value, the overall value of black males, and improving the public image of black men. But he also spoke to the contempt, and he called it a low boiling level of contempt that the women in our community have for us. And it's obvious, right? And all these other different places. And we even catch strays when we ain't the men that's responsible for it. I want y'all to listen to this lady right here, right? I want y'all to listen to her describe a date that she went on and pay attention to something she tried to slide past the goalie.
got back home from Long Island. Again, here we go. Facebook dating. Thinking I'm gonna find a relationship or a boyfriend. No, I find a man that wants a dominatrix, that wants... All right, let's get into it. Meet the guy on Facebook, right? He's an older man. I said, let me try an older man again. Or let me just try an older man, right? He's Greek.
Yeah, and I think I covered this last week, but I wanted to cover it one more time. He's a Greek man. He's not black. He's Greek. All right? And because I covered it last week, I'm not going to go over it again. But this woman, not only did she put on, he had pantyhose waiting for her. She also had to put, he also had a pair of pantyhose for himself. He had a pair of pantyhose for himself. So, and having a pair of pantyhose for himself, like what, on the first date, you at this man's house? But as brothers, we're supposed to be, you know, coffee dates aren't good. We got to wine and dine. We have to be all over the place with it. We have to spend $300-$500 on dates. Brothers, this is why I tell y'all, man, know thyself and see yourself for the, you know, and see yourself for how much you matter. Not just how much you matter, but your value, your worth. See yourself for that, man. I want y'all to check out this clip. I think, I'm not sure if I played this one yet, but check this out, because we're just going through the clips right now.
Hey, y'all, come look at this.
Oh, no, we saw this one already. So, but you know, that's not the only thing going on right now, right? So, I want y'all to check this clip out, and this is what I mean by black men not getting their flowers, right? I want y'all, these brothers, superheroes, check out what they did, in the mass of a, when they came across a mass shooter.
While she yells out, there's a shooter. I don't know what happened. I just walked over there towards him. He pulled out his gun. We're rough. We're wrestling for the gun. I'm trying to keep it from pointing to me. He's trying to point it this way, point it that way. So as I grab the gun, we fall to the ground. And that's when I'm like, help, help. So I'm pulling the gun away from him. That's when he comes over, hits him, strikes him, keeps him on the ground. I move all the weapons and pull him away from him. I didn't even know until after I pulled the bag of weapons away from him. He had other weapons. Yeah.
So get to the checkout line and the shots fired off. Bow, bow, bow. So I have my two little ones with me. I get them outside. So as my girl, she's like, oh, I left my phone. I left my phone and my keys. So I go back in there and try to receive the property, The worker, she's like, oh, that's the gunman right there. Watch out, watch out. So I'm over here. I'm trying to get it for cover now. I notice Clark, he walks up and he grabs the dude like he's trying to get the gun away from him. So when I seen Clark, you know, I go over there and I'm helping Clark out now, because now Clark's life's in danger. So when we get him on the ground and all that stuff, Clark pushes his bags out of the way, gets his guns away from there and everything. I'm still on there beating this guy up, kicking him up.
That's all we want to do,
beating him, everything. Just trying to get him away from this bag.
Because he tried to get back up.
Just to try to get away from the bag. As soon as we did that, the cops pull up. Boom. They all flying around. They pull up. We stopped what we was doing, and they took in their hand.
What happened? This was from me keeping him from pointing the gun at me, because we was wrestling, and after he pulled it out of his shirt, I'm holding the gun, keeping the barrel pointed away from me. He's trying to point it towards me. I'm trying to pull it away from him. As I'm doing that, I'm making sure the weapon is not pointed at me. As we were struggling, that's when I turned to the side like this, and that's how I got this.
He got scraped all up on the shoulder.
And as that happened, if he wouldn't have came and helped,
Clark would have been gone.
Yeah, I would have been gone.
Clark would have been gone.
I had the gun in my hand, trying to keep it from him from pulling it. After I fell with the gun, he came and struck him.
Struck him and it was over.
Got away from him, got the bag, didn't know, like I said, previous.
Yeah, shout out to those brothers, man. Stop the... a mass shooter who was trying to inflict harm on the community. These brothers pulled up and did the damn thing. And this is what we need to talk about. Like, brothers are always pulling up, and brothers are always playing the role of hero when it comes to the situation and circumstances. And they're basically unsung heroes because nobody really ever gives them credit. I appreciate the fact that this particular, they had a news conference where they were actually able to break down, you know, a situation, a bad situation, you know. And there was one more joint I wanted to get to. I'm trying to find it. Just give me a second, y'all. Like I said, I'm doing right now. I'm dealing with, you know, I'm moving on the fly. Like, really, like this is this would be like a travel kit type situation. What I'm dealing with right now in terms of like pulling all these clips together. Damn it, did I share it? I could have sworn I sent this one last clip over. Because it's a really powerful clip, and it speaks to this one. This particular message was for the Young Brothers, so I'm hoping that I could find it, you know, because this particular story I wanted to share. Here you go, right here. All right, so. Let me see, where is this? This might be on Instagram. Nope, TikTok. All right, I want y'all to... Hold on. I want y'all to check this out. This is from one of the five people that were indicted, charged, and convicted in the murder of Julio Fulio. I believe this young man is Isaiah Chance, and I want y'all to listen to... what he has to say in regards to his role in the particular homicide that he took part in.
To my city, man. It ain't worth it, boy. Like, it ain't worth it. Like, me being a rapper from my city and Fulio being a rapper from our city, it ain't worth it. Like, my mouth getting dry, sorry. Like, the dissing, the beefing, the shooting, like, for what? Like, for what? Like, when you sitting in your cell alone, cold, it's lonely as hell in that bit. Everybody leave you. Like, nobody here for you. Like, the ones that's your ride or die, your girlfriends, whoever you love, the only person there for you is your mother. And maybe like one friend, maybe. But it ain't worth it though, bro. It ain't worth it. I was 21 years old facing the death penalty. I never ever, the only, my only interactions with law enforcement was traffic tickets. Wake up next morning, I'm facing the death penalty. That's how quick life can change. It ain't worth it, bro. That's all. I'm sorry if I was nervous. Sorry.
No, it's okay, Mr. Chance. Thank you for saying that.
Yes, ma'am.
So that was Isaiah Chance. And if many of you remember, I covered, not only did I cover the murder, you know, of Julio Fulio as they tracked him down all the way to Tampa Bay from Jacksonville. They had taken several attempts on his life. First time it was in Jacksonville, he got shot at a gas station. Got shot in the foot. And then there was other times when they just shot at him and, you know, and missed. You know, I covered Julio Fulio. I think he might have been the first drill rapper I ever covered. And talking about, you know, the how devastating drill rap is. Well, he's not the first I ever covered. The first I ever covered was Chief Keef when he first came out. And he received that multi-million dollar deal for that song, Who I Don't Like. Glorifying, you know, killing of the ops and all that other shit. And you look at, like, you look at these young brothers, man. Where's their guidance? Who's telling them that, you know, you're walking down, you're going astray, you're going heading down the wrong path? You look at some of these guys, man, and then you start after questioning the pairing of parents, right? And why the ladies are always attracted to gangsters, because Julio's father was a gangster. Got shot and killed in his own living room. Talk about, what's the other one from Chicago that died in Atlanta? King Von. King Von's father was so gangster that nobody had the heart to deal with him head on. He was killed by a sniper's bullet from maybe 100 yards away. You got to ask yourself, what are we breeding here? And what's going forward? This is why as men, you have to be purposeful. And you also have to be purposeful in terms of like your seed. And that's why with one of the things we're pushing with the Jagna plan, I mean, with the Jagna chain, you want a Jagna plan. It is a Jagna plan, but the Jagna chain is we're trying to identify how we can get into these young brothers' lives early on and how we can break these generational curses. These houses with baby mamas and baby daddies and all this other shit. We're trying to actually get to a place where, you know, we can start building responsible families that are balanced, families that can actually have it, that'll have a chance. And then the culture that'll have a chance, a culture that won't celebrate, you know, degenerate behavior. A culture that will understand that, you know, having a value system doesn't make you white. It makes you right. So, family, I want to thank you all for tuning in for this episode of The Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I hope y'all, you know, try to do a little mellow today. You know what I'm saying? I hear the mellow melodies and whatever. But I hope y'all get something out of this. You know, from beginning to end, man, you know, we go hard here in terms of trying to get our people back on the right path. And brothers, y'all already know, you know what I'm saying? As we go, the world and all, the world goes. And we are the number one ops right now for everybody. So you always got to have your head on the swivel. It's just like the Matrix. If they're not locked in, then they're locked in with the enemies. And you're always going to be a target. Don't fall for the lady in the red dress. When you ever get in despair, when you ever feeling like,
what more do you want from me?
Always remember this.
The hunt is on. And you're the prey.
And lock in with some real brothers, man. So, like I said, with that said, family, wish the best of health to all of you. Excuse me. You know, I just crossed off my 52nd birthday, the 52nd trip around the sun. Happy to be here. But also, family, one thing I kind of consistently remind you of is war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better damn well be willing to wage war for it. And with that, I am out of here.